Still Standing is a podcast of hope. My name is Allie Patterson, and I am your host. On this podcast, you're going to hear stories from people who have encountered a living God and found help and hope in their real life. No matter what your life is like right now or what you think of God, I hope you hear stories like yours, and I hope you walk away thinking there's hope for me too. Everyone on this podcast would gladly say it's because of Jesus that I am still standing. Come find out why. Okay, everybody. Today we're going to talk about what I think sounds like a small topic, but I think it's actually much more important in our everyday life than we even think. Today we're talking about how to stay standing in the face of small, everyday losses, how to navigate the little things that the phrase that rings in my mind over stuff like I want to talk about today is things that you feel disappointed about. And if you said it out loud, somebody might go, eh, that's like a first world problem. Get over it. Suck it up. But there's these little disappointments and little moments of grief and loss in our everyday life that can really weigh us down and build up. And today, I've got the perfect guest to talk about this because they have a brand new book out. And yes, it's about big loss, and it's also about little loss. And they've quickly become people that I'm really very fond of. I'm looking forward to you meeting them. Today's guests are Chuck and Ashley Elliott. Chuck's a pastor for Bethel Church in Indiana. Ashley's a counselor, and they have an amazing new book out together. And I've recently got to know them a little bit. So I invited them on the podcast to talk about loss, how to navigate loss, and especially these little ones that we kind of want to blow off. And we're not really sure we even allowed to feel that. So the name of their book is I Used to Be Blank. I used to be blank. So I'm going to ask them to introduce themselves and tell us, use your own formula and say, hey, I'm Chuck. I used to be, and tell us something about yourselves. Just introduce yourselves to everybody listening. And thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
Hey, we're Chuck and Ashley. I'm Chuck. And part of my story is a little bit hard way to start off with. I say I used to be trusted. Thanks, Allie, for teeing that up.
But you used to be other things, too. I used to be
other things.
Say a little one, Chuck.
What's a little one?
You used to be a high school swimmer.
I used to be a high school golfer, and I loved it.
There you go.
I loved it.
I used to be a high school golfer. I love it.
And I'm Ashley. I'm going to say one that's a little bigger, but it is still small. And I'll tell you more about my struggle in a little bit. But I used to be able to sit really, really well. I've been having tailbone pain.
Oh, hilarious.
Almost a year.
I mean, not the pain, but just the way that you would say it like that.
But I literally really struggled, wouldn't even hardly give myself permission to fill in the blank. Mm-hmm. And until I did, I said, hey, it's about small losses. It's okay. I can acknowledge that. I found freedom whenever I did give myself permission to grieve the small losses.
But yeah, I would say I'm Allie, and I used to be a fast runner. Now I'm sitting here with a dull ache in my left hip that has been plaguing me and slowing me down. So what is something that right now in your life is keeping you standing?
I like to start my morning with devotions, a shower, a meal, and then time to look at my schedule. So kids fit in there as well. There's lots of chaos with the kiddos. We have three boys. But if I don't get to do those things, if I don't get to look at my calendar and know what's coming up, then I'm usually going to feel like I'm going to miss something, and that adds stress.
Yeah, that's good. So morning rhythms keep you upright.
Man, you think about staying standing. I think about the little moments that I'm trying to capture and do a little bit better job of that. Like yesterday, we'd been out of town last week. So being with our little five-year-old, I think some of those things gives me energy. Mm. And it's like I'm capturing that. I'm being in the moment. It gives me energy, but also slows me down at the same time. And that's what I need.
I need to slow down,
but I need to be energized.
Yeah.
And that's what did it for me yesterday. And sometimes he's frustrating. He doesn't listen, but I still love him. but yesterday I had a couple of sweet moments, and that kept me going. And yeah. I try to draw back to those things.
And with our boys as well, we last night stopped and looked at the stars because we had a late night soccer game, and we were on our way back we were in the country. And so the stars were great, and we live in the city. So we pulled off and just got out. It was like 30 seconds, but you held one of our teenage boys. Aww. Actually, I think you ended up holding both of them because your neck starts hurting when you're looking up, and like, do that to me, because they're doing it to the five-year-old. And yeah, I think moments like that help us feel better today. And I think maybe that's part of why we had a better morning this morning than we did yesterday with our teenagers. I think doing those different things that get us out of the ordinary.
I didn't even make that connection to having a better morning and the fact that I held a 13-year-old like a baby. And so he could look lay on his back while I held him and look up at the stars. And he asked me to. So I was like, you're getting kind of big, but daddy will try.
That's great. Well, you mentioned your sons. Give us like a snippet of where are you? What's your life like? Chuck, I mentioned that you were a pastor. Ashley, you're a counselor. And just kind of give us a, who are your people? What are you doing right now? I know you just wrote a book, but surely that's not commonplace in your life. So what's your normal life look like?
Well, like everybody else, we stay pretty busy. So we have three boys, 13, 11, and 5 years old. I'm full-time at the church. Ashley was at the university for 11 years teaching, but recently she's transitioned to more writing and speaking and doing that. So that takes up our schedule. So we spend time preparing for talks, talking about the book, doing these type of things that we love that we get to do. So it's all really good things, but there's not a lot of time. So that's probably why we talk about squeezing those moments in with the kids. They feel that much sweeter.
And I'm a counselor, counsel a couple of days a week, and then make room for prepping for speaking engagements. And I think that we have a worship day tomorrow. Kid is leading at chapel. So we have musicians in our family too. Ours plays the drums and the bass, but he's going to play at chapel tomorrow. So between the two of us, we're going to try to get one of us to swing over there in the middle of our day for about 20 minutes.
And that's great.
And it's just the juggling of things. Mm-hmm. You know, we're thankful for the opportunities that we have that our kids have. But yeah, that's a lot about us.
And we've never had much time. So like starting off with saying I used to be a high school golfer, I don't have time for those things anymore. So it's kind of like I don't know if you just talk about our daily life, what consumes it. We don't watch a lot of TV. We don't get to do a lot of those other things. Not even that we would if we had that much time, because there's so much that you can do. You can't do everything, but there's a lot of important things that we're trying to do.
Well, I think one of the things that I was intrigued about, I know that your book covers, and you guys just in general, like your heart is to help people navigate through loss. That's really what's at the heart of your book. And you guys have some personal and really poignant reasons why that topic has been on your heart and why you would want to speak about that topic. I can understand that usually our best, the best way we can help others usually comes out of what we ourselves have been through. And so I know there's some reasons for that. I'd love to hear about those. But I also want to talk about one of the things that intrigued me about this particular interview was the idea that we have these everyday losses that we almost aren't allowed to feel. And I really, because of your focus on how to navigate loss, I am really interested in how you would help us become equipped. There's a resiliency that we need to life. And part of that resiliency is helping to navigate those small losses. And I know that what I was typically taught to do was just minimize them as though they weren't important. And I think we even do that in our language around how we talk to each other about small disappointments and small losses. We so want to make those things better for each other, but instead we encourage people to kind of cover them up, minimize them, or not talk about them and just pretend like they weren't big enough to matter. And so I'm intrigued by that. Yes, we all face massive other big loss. But what have you guys found as you went through the book, as you prepared, as you've just lived your own life? Talk to me about the difference between navigating a really big loss and navigating more everyday, smaller ones. What are the similarities? What are the differences? How did you guys come to think about that as you wrote the book and went through all the research for it?
Well, the tips that we include in the book and the practical activities can apply if they're big losses or small losses. So one of the things that we say is to pick one thing. It can be tempting to pick seven, but if you try to pick one thing and you go through the book, you give yourself permission to blank. And so you're going to give yourself permission. So if it would be a small loss, maybe it's even going to college, which we would think of as a good thing, but you're like, I lost all my high school buddies. Yeah, I lost the stability of... yeah, having my family right in the house with me to keep me accountable and make good choices or to
and make
read the Bible
food.
Together.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, good food, that's all the things. So when we go through changes or transitions, we so often will say, God's got this, or, oh, just keep your head up. And I think sometimes that tells us, barrel through, don't look at the grief or the sadness, and you'll be fine. And I think that's a myth, because if we do take time to examine our pain, especially if you just take the college example, then we can say, oh, no, I do miss my family, but then I'm going to go back and have fun, and I'm mm-hmm. going to be fine because I dealt with it. Where when we bury it, we end up just feeling like, I don't really know why. Mm-hmm. I just kind of feel depressed. I'm supposed to be having fun, and I just can't put my finger on it. It's because we're burying it. And if we expose it, then we can know how to handle it more appropriately.
So many times people think that if you have something that's really good going to happen, and it seems like that good outweighs the bad, you have no reason to feel the bad. And that's a great example of it for going mm-hmm. to college. So going to college is a good thing, and you would still choose that. But losing your high school friends is like, that's nothing. You're going to college. But the thing is, what if you don't process the loss that you had of the friends, circle, relationships, that good food at home, mm-hmm. and then you're kind of hanging on to that, and you're holding that weight and that grief, even if you view it as being small, mm-hmm. and you're not emotionally, relationally, spiritually, mentally available for what it is that you need to do when you're in college. So what if normally you would be at a 9 on engagement level at university, but because you didn't process the grief of leaving your hometown and your friends, you're only at like a 6 or a 5. That's the gap that the things could really make a difference.
So you're saying so much space inside, in your inner life, is being taken up by that loss without expressing mm-hmm. it, without just getting it out and dealing with it. You know, that helps me because I was thinking, you know, I was just kind of preparing a little bit in my own mind for talking to you guys today. And I was thinking, what are the little losses that I can identify just even in my own life, you know, lately. Mm. And I'm staring down one right this moment. And I don't know, maybe this is a little bit bigger of one, but I think you would still categorize it as a smaller loss. But my best friend is moving to Texas in 5 days. Mm. And I feel that loss today. I can already feel it. I'll see her several more times this week before she leaves. But that feels like a loss that most of us have gone through. It's very, mm-hmm. you know, much like a college student, like you just, you know, a move separates you from someone you love. And so I, mm-hmm. I was thinking, gosh, I feel that loss coming, and it actually makes me a little bit nervous. I do the thing in my head where I go, well, I'm not going to have fill in the blank. You know, I'm not, mm-hmm. I'm not going to have the support that I've had. I'm not going to have a friend to walk with. Like, you know, yesterday I texted her and I was like, hey, I'm going for a walk. Can you come? And she couldn't, but I don't have another friend I would do that with. Mm-hmm. And so those are the little kinds of losses. And I'm happy. I'm healthy. I love my family. I have a wonderful husband. Yeah. I've got work that I love to do. I could easily say, well, look at these 17 things that are wonderful. And think that that was good enough. So what should I do? Help me. What should I do in the face of a loss like that, where there's still a million other good things? What do you do?
I think you already started doing it, which is awesome that you recognized it. Like, you became aware. Mm-hmm. You were aware that you're worried that you're not going to have something that you loved. Mm-hmm. Or that you love having in your life. So what we would do is we would help to people to assess what are some of the things that they can do to add that into their life and to plan for that. So sending a text message, going for a walk. Now, I'm not just telling you to replace your best friend right now, right. But I'm saying there are other people or other things that you can do to have that in your life and in relationship. And is it going to stretch and sometimes be painful and not be something you maybe feel comfortable doing? Possibly. But what is it that you're going to think of is, what are my options for doing that? And ultimately recognizing I love this. I have this need. What's it look like for me to meet this need, even though this person might be moving? And then you keep trying things.
And with that assessment process, we can look at what we've done in the past. Like, do I have a tendency to just push people away? Like, I'm not going to ask anyone to go walk.
Yes,
they're just going to leave me.
I do. Yeah.
So we look at assess, what have I done in the past? Has it worked or hasn't it worked? And we try to assess what are other options. And so that's where Chuck was kind of getting at the need. Like, what's my need? I need the connection, but it's also staying connected to that friend. But I love that you bring this up because we don't like to compare. So we don't define like this is a large loss, this is a small loss.
Oh, good. That's helpful.
Intentional. It's intentional that we don't, because if I say, oh, the loss of a dog, that's small. It's like, well, no, we had someone, I was trying to convince him at this conference last week, you lost your dog and you loved your dog. Like, it's okay to give yourself permission. And he was telling me about how his wife was just not super empathetic and how it hurt him. And she's like, she's an idiot. But I could see like, okay, well then now you're hurting her because you're putting your walls up. You know, she's in the wrong, but you're putting distance there. And so if we're assessing what we've done, like, well, you knew she was wrong, but you're pushing her away. So let's assess the need beneath it. Like, I need you to validate this loss and stop telling me it's not as big as this, or I had this bigger death.
Yeah.
And I think that goes back to the minimizing that is a struggle.
Yeah, that is. And, you know, I was thinking about your college example and becoming aware of a loss. I wouldn't have thought of as a step until you articulated it, but so often we are taught to bury, to minimize, to gloss over, to try to look at blessings as though they somehow cancel out the loss when they in fact can exist together. And I was thinking about something I did instinctively. I have a couple of college students that just went away to college. They're freshmen, not my own children, but people that I care about. And the first Saturday that each of them were there on their respective campuses, I texted them and said, hey, just checking in on you. I remember the first couple of weekends in college felt hard because I was used to having a space to relax and let my hair down, but I didn't really know anyone well enough to do that. I just wanted to see, are you feeling that way? How are you doing? Are you finding a place to rest and relax today? Like, are you having fun this weekend? And I think what I was doing is trying to make it okay for them to say, I'm supposed to be having fun, but I'm feeling a loss. Mm.
That's an incredible text. Hopefully people are listening. They get a tip from that, just to recognize somebody could be going through something that you felt or experienced, and you reaching out and just expressing that. You didn't tell them what to do. You were empathizing and preemptively saying, hey, I felt this, and you weren't trying to put it on them. And I think that's a great thing to do. And going back, connecting those two things from what we talked about, there is no tipping point and there is no scale of when you can define something as grief or you define it as being large or small. There's nothing. You have public opinion or people's opinion or your own or whatever pressure you put on yourself. But if you recognize it as being something that is different in you and it made you unstable, it made you feel a loss, then you deal with it, whether it takes you a few seconds because you just recognize that, I do miss that. Well, what do I need to do? What do I need to do to meet that need, God? Okay, I'm going to give it to you and you show me something later. Literally just that short of a prayer, or it's something that is a longer process. And no matter what it is, there's no cutoff point.
That's so validating of, like, I think a lot of the internal conversations we have with ourselves, because we know we feel that loss. We can't, that is the reality. It's just what we do with it, how we talk about it, whether we allow ourselves to actually process through it. So you would say even quote unquote smaller everyday loss, whatever that is, whatever we think that is, would you say that's grief? I always think of grief as something bigger. I don't know that I give myself permission to use that word. Do you use that word for?
Yeah, I have learned to. I didn't until several years ago. And I remember lying on my belly in the middle of COVID and feeling like I'm going crazy. What is wrong with me? And I prayed and I said, God, the last time I remember feeling this was when I lost babies to miscarriage, because that's part of our story as well. And it clicked in my brain, like, this is grief. And there was something so liberating whenever I gave myself permission to say, I'm grieving. And I like, what am I grieving? I'm grieving that I am now trying to manage all of my college students' emotional and mental stability and try to teach a class virtually and have kids at home with me that I'm not only trying to keep good so that I can teach, but I'm also trying to teach them. And we had like a one-year-old and it was, he didn't even like TV that much. So like everything changed in an instant. It and I was struggling. And so when I gave myself to say, I am grieving, it just shifted things for me and I felt less crazy, which increased my stability. And then I knew, okay, what are my needs? I gotta get some help. I gotta do some things to build stability and
so
then move forward.
You guys have said that several times. Articulating your need. Talk about the importance of that step because some of us maybe me, are not always inclined to articulate our own need. How important is that in dealing with loss?
It's hugely important because you're learning about yourself. You're learning about what it is that you need. What is it that makes you stable? What is it that makes you whole? What is it that maybe God has put in your life for a purpose that you could be avoiding just because you don't know how to replace it or some kind of way? So if you don't think about what it is that you loved, about who, what, the position, the situation, the relationship, whatever it was that you lost, then you don't know what to do next. Because if you don't think about, okay, so you have this friendship and the person moves away. What did I love about that? And I loved having somebody that I could text. Okay, I can still text them even though because they're still going to have their phone and they're not going to lose my phone number just because they move, hopefully. Okay, so don't tick them off, Allie. Okay, so, okay, I like going on walks. Okay, so I like that community time. That's really important to me. I like being able to have somebody to go to dinner with. I love that type of community. And I like to be able to invite other people. I like somebody who can appreciate my sarcasm or my comedy. Okay, you're thinking about, well, what if this gives me an opportunity to develop some of that with one of my kiddos? I'm not talking about you specifically now.
Yeah.
Or somebody else,
yeah,
another neighbor. Mm-hmm. Or somebody else. God, what are you opening me up for? And sometimes, and we talk about this in a quick fashion, but sometimes it's a revealing process that God shows us through prayer. We say, okay, God, I'm feeling a change here. What is it that you could be opening up for me? What type of an opportunity could you be showing me? And we don't do that in a disrespectful way to who it is or what it is that we lost, that we loved. We're just saying, what are my needs?
And when we face loss, we end up like shifting to this negative space. And I think that we forget sometimes, or we don't want to bring God into those negative spaces. So I think this whole process, especially if we're bringing God into that prayer, like, God, what are the things that I needed from this relationship? And how do I come to you to meet those needs? It is a powerful thing to do. And I think even as Christians, we realize we don't always go to God immediately whenever we're in a negative space with just frustrations, disappointments, or loss. We try to clean ourselves up and then we come back and want to go back to church or go back to the Lord in prayer.
I can appreciate when we are afraid of loss or we're facing it full on, sometimes our bad place is more comfortable than being able to articulate a need, to talk with God, to be open to new possibilities. Those are hard things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah. I think that's a good thing to point out, and I'll let Ashley keep going. But I was like, you get comfortable in your negative space.
Yeah.
And I think that's something good to point out, that it's almost more comfortable to stay there, especially because we, in the visualization we do with switch theory, the theory that Ashley developed, we talk about like you're building a house and sometimes you're building a mansion inside this negative space or this positive space. And if you know what that room feels like in a negative space, it's almost comforting because you know the walls that you've put around you to keep people out.
Well, and we put up our walls to protect ourselves, but we have to remember God's way is perfect. All the Lord's promises prove true. Our way is very fallible. And so when we look at our walls, go, okay, I'm trying to protect myself from pain. And if we lean in and we say, well, what need is this meeting in the immediate future? Okay, it's probably meeting a need. But in the long term, if I put my walls up and I don't let anyone in, I'm going to get lonely. I'm going to get depressed. I'm going to get sad. Go, wait, long term, this doesn't work. But God's way works in the long term and helps us to create the life that we want. But we also have his defense system that he gives us in Ephesians 6. We have the belt of truth.
Yeah.
I think sometimes we think we can't handle the truth, but we can. So understanding, like, I'm in a negative space. Oh, here I am, is a little bit less condemning when we have that epiphany, like, oh, I'm in a negative space again. I got to pray. Like making that association, I'm going to teach myself to pray in a negative space. And we've been working on this for months. It's not something that we're going to ever probably perfect,
but
we have gotten so much better at praying in a negative space. And it really has changed our family.
That's an incredible tip. You're helping me to understand my minimization of my own losses makes me not talk to God and makes me assume that he cannot or will not restore, replace, redeem, when in fact, those two things are exactly what he wants me to do. He wants me to come to him and he wants me to rely on his word and his promises that he's good. He is good to know what I need, how to restore what's broken, how to fill places that we have lost. And that's so incredible for me to even sit and realize that I'm facing something that in my own life feels like a significant loss, and I have yet to talk to him about it. Are you kidding me? Why? It can only be that I've minimized it. I've made myself look away from it or whatever, or I've got, you know, and that tells me I'm going to head into that negative space with it, right?
Wow.
So it's incredibly important for us to have the language that you guys are offering us to even talk about it. Until I was like, hey, what's a loss I'm facing? You know, maybe Chuck and Ashley will have something to say about that. You guys, I mean, you're giving us language to be able to understand what's happening internally, and it's going to happen whether we do it in a healthy way or we do it in a terribly unhealthy way, right?
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, and we try to help people to recognize what they look like in a positive and a negative space. And you'll find that in a negative space, you're believing lies. That when you're in a positive space, you'd be like, no, that's stupid. Because the things that you said just then, saying, God can't do anything with that. God doesn't see me. God, I'm not going to give this to him. This is too small. This should be something that I just deal with. When you're in a positive space, when you're on, you're like, are you kidding me right now?
And what did I even tell my own friend? I said to her, hey, if I can't be your neighbor, I want you to have the best people in Austin, Texas that the Lord has in that city. I'm praying for that for you. If I can't live by you, then I want the best people he's got in Austin to be your new best friends. Like, I want them on your street, in your life, in your church, at your work. Like, I want the best for you. And yet—
That's good.
What do I think? I think God's going to feel differently about me?
Yeah.
Well, and because you say that for her, you assume that means that you automatically get the short end of the stick because God's limited.
Right.
It's because it's a scarcity thing. There's only so many good friends out there.
Yeah.
And then if she gets all of them and she left you, then Allie, I'm sorry. I mean, you're just, this is your fate.
There's
now.
Nobody left for you in Cincinnati. Good luck.
I'm sorry. You know? That's you're done. You're
I mean,
done.
That's silly because I even have other wonderful people in my life.
Yeah.
And my instinct is to want for her what I don't see possible for myself. Mm. I love the language of being able to articulate the need to be able to talk about the loss, whether we deem it small, medium, large, or otherwise. It doesn't really matter. What matters is what's happening internally, you know, inside of our inner world. Are there other tools or strategies that you would say, these are critical, other exercises that you wrote about that you would say, hey, if you're facing down a loss right this moment, no matter whether you think that's big or small, is there anything else that you think from an immediacy standpoint, like what should I do right now? We're gonna all move on with our day. We're gonna be driving in the car, taking a walk, or, you know, running around a kid's such and such. What should I be doing?
Yeah. Well, in our book, it is in chapter 3, so we give a little bit of lead into it, but we encourage people to understand their positive and negative spaces. And so we've touched on that just a little bit. In our coaching, we use a worksheet and we tell people, we desire that you become familiar with your positive and your negative space. Because when we understand the differences, we can recognize the lies. And similar to saying, oh, I'm in a negative space, and it has a little bit less of an identity attachment that frees us to kind of call out on the Lord. We also can expose the lies of the enemy whenever we know in a positive space, I know, like you said, that God is not big. God can do all things. God can meet my needs, and God can restore what the locusts have eaten or what the friendship leaves exposed. But in a negative space, we feel like, well, maybe God doesn't care about me, or God doesn't see me, or however it might be that that we have this patterned thinking and it comes out in these negative spaces. And so we literally use paper. People can print out a worksheet that we have that we offer, and it's on our website and such, but that people can use the worksheet, write out, or you can do it on paper. You say at the top, you write positive thinking. And then on the other side, you do negative thinking. And you do at the bottom, positive behavior, and then negative behavior. And you're just beginning to say, Lord, help me see the difference. When I'm in a positive space, I think I can because the Lord is in me. And in a negative space, whenever we feel like we can't, maybe we stop reading the Bible or we stop taking those faith steps. But when we get back to that positive, we feel hopeful and we can take the steps of faith that God's calling us to.
Okay, so I want to talk about the Bible for a second, because some of what you just defined as a positive space for a person of faith is the Word of God. It is knowing the Word of God, is understanding who God is. It is understanding what He's capable of. It's understanding who you are to Him and because of Him. And so talk to me about, you probably have clients that are all over the place on the faith spectrum, but talk about the power that's in the Word of God being defining that positive space. What are your go-to places? If you've got somebody who says, yep, I'm willing to use the Bible to define my positive space, what are some of your favorite pieces of the Word of God? Where would you point people to? What are some of your go-to favorite things to try to say, like, okay, this is grounded, healthy thinking? Where do we go? Tell us where to read, how to adopt some of the stuff that you love in the Word of God.
Well, one of my favorite verses is in Psalms, and it gives us this picture of what a dry desert looks like and what God can bring into it. And it says that though people go through the valley of Baca, that God will make it a place of springs. And before that, it says, blessed is the person whose strength is in the Lord. And so we think about what it means to have their strength in the Lord. We put our strength in a lot of things. We put our strength in our own mind, our abilities, our education, money, our spouse, all kinds of things. But if our strength is in the Lord, then we are putting Him above all those things. And then it continues on in the verse. It says that their heart is set on pilgrimage. That means they're gritty. They're not giving up just because something is a little bit difficult or massively difficult. They are going to say, I'm on this journey because I'm putting my strength in the Lord. And with that, then we could read on the verse that says, they walk through the valley of Baca. All they see in front of them is dryness. The Valley of Baca is a place that's known for being dry, but it says that God will make it a place of springs. And so we just see this imagery of us walking through the valley, and we have our kids behind us, or we have other people we lead. And though we look in front of us and we see dryness, when our steps, when our foot lifts up off that sand, water shoots out. And we see a stream coming out because of a step of faith. And we take another step and we hear something. And they're like, there are fruit trees growing, and that God is bringing life into the difficulty. And I think that verse is aspirational for me. There's a grief that comes with it that's like, Lord, that's not what I look like. I want to bring the life to the desert through your Spirit. But so often I feel like I'm dry and I'm struggling. But when I've prayed over that verse and I said, Lord, that's what I want. I want your Spirit to fill me in the hard times so that I can continue to pour out into others. God has illuminated how He has brought life to the dry moments. And He's helped me to see things I've missed in the past. And that's been encouraging. And so I think whether it's aspirational for us, or if it is something that we really do see, God does bring life into those springs. And so helping people understand, you know, it's normal to feel broken. It's normal to feel unstable, but let's go to God with it. And when we do, He fills us and strengthens us so that we can build that stability and go to Him, understand our negative spaces, call on Him. Again, that's what continuously what we're doing. We're calling on God for help so that we can become that place of springs.
You know what your picture forced me to do? I was closing my eyes while you were describing it, and it forced me, it's easy to see the loss. It's easy to see the dryness. It's easy to paint that landscape when you're looking at a loss. That's the easy part. But as your part in the Word went on where it's like, you know, the Lord's going to fill that with springs, if I just sit there and force myself into a picture that's full of life and nourishment and water again. And it pushes my mind to imagine possibilities that I don't actually want to. Because what I want to do is I want to say, no, my reality is the loss. That's my reality. So thanks anyway, God.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm looking at the dryness. And that picture that you just painted, it pushes my mind to go, but there's another part to that. There is life beyond that. The Lord has something for you beyond that. So what is that? What would it look like? You know, and what a great visualization, like to push yourself to visualize life again. Mm-hmm. Because I think so often when we face a loss, that is the reality. So that's all we can see. And we refuse. I refuse. Like sometimes I refuse to picture what would life look like beyond that loss.
Yeah. And I even want to encourage you or give permission to lean into that, to say, why is it that I don't want to get out of this negative space? Why do I want to build my house in the negative space or stay in the desert? And just give that to God. So even if we now is like, Lord, what is it that each of us, not just you, Allie, I do the same thing. And I'm pretty sure that there's at least one listener out there that's like, oh yeah, I do that too. So Lord, we invite you to help us. So what we see is there's function in every dysfunctional behavior. So there is something good that comes from every negative thing. So if we're trying to build our house or we're trying to say, I don't want to get better. I don't want to see the good. I want to see the loss. Maybe we fear that no one else will see it. So if you take the death of someone, you know, like I have to stay upset because everybody else is being happy and I can't let it be that this person would think that they weren't that important. And so we go, oh, well, if Chuck died, he wouldn't want me to be miserable to show him that I loved him. He'd want me to think about him. So how is it that I can let myself understand that need? So going back to those needs so that I can meet it in a healthier way. So understanding that function and the dysfunction is a powerful piece, especially through prayer, we can look beneath the surface. But I think that the answer is different for different people, but there is something that is being satisfied by staying angry, staying in that negative space.
And sometimes we see it come out in our personalities because Allie, I mean, from knowing you as much as we do, I know that you're pretty driven and you're pretty, like, you've been able to fix a lot of your own problems. So when we kind of like...
that already? What?
Yeah. I noticed. So I think you're used to looking at the things that you can fix or the things that you can do. So it's kind of like, well, wait a second. You're not in charge of the springs, you're in charge of the footsteps. So I can look at what's in front of me and look at the desert, and you just think that if you grit through it, then maybe that's your punishment or that's what it is that you can do. But it's hard to turn around because you didn't create those springs. But allowing God to be the one who creates them is something hard for me as well. So it's thinking about, okay, where are my eyes going? And it's like, I can't make the springs happen. I didn't earn that. I don't deserve that. Yeah, you're exactly right, Chuck. Like, you didn't earn that. You don't deserve that. But what you're doing is you're taking the steps in front of you.
Yeah. Well, you've certainly read my mail, so I'll be downloading your worksheet later. tell everybody, thank you guys so much. I mean, it's just been wonderful to talk with you about real stuff. And if people want, I'm not kidding. If people want to go get the worksheet so they can process through, okay, what's my positive space? What's my negative space? Where am I with my loss right now? What needs? Tell them where to get that on your website, I think you said it was. And then tell us where to find your book, where they can really dive in deep to any level of loss and how to walk through that and then out of it in a whole and healthy way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can find a lot of our resources at just chuckandashley.com. It's real simple, chuckandashley.com. And the book's sold everywhere that books are sold. It's also on Audible. You can hear us read it too if you want. But the website is really a great place to get the hub of connection for those things, for switch theory and a lot of the other stuff that we do.
Yeah, we have the links to the book on the website as well. So chuckandashley.com.
Chuckandashley.com. You guys can trust these two and their hearts and their ministry and their words. And man, I feel helped just having you on here today in my real life, just going like, hey, what was my loss? And I feel like you took that and blessed me with it today. So I'll be talking to the Lord later about how I feel about my friend moving. Thank you for pushing me into that. And thanks for being on the podcast today. It was great to have you guys. Hey, thanks for listening. For all things still standing, head over to theallypatterson.com. You can find my new book, How to Stay Standing, as well as other resources, including articles, Bible studies, and all kinds of resources just for you. No matter where you listen to podcasts, would you leave us a rating? Maybe even a written review? It helps others find this podcast, and we want to help as many people as possible bring hope and courage into the middle of life's storms. If you want to connect more with me, you can find me on Instagram or Facebook at The Ally Patterson. Still Standing is a production of Crossroads Church, Cincinnati, Ohio.